Mr. President, if you buy a Tesla, will boost Tesla sales and boost their stock?
I hope it does.
Yes. He hopes it does. Gotta help your friends.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Why?
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No,
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, also elsewhere in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day for your listening convenience on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com, and there is no denying it. Thank you very much. Thank you for starting us off with a giggle, Desi Doyen. How are you holding up?
Doing okay.
Okay, well, no one believes you. Anyway, we got a lot of drama underway as we go to air today for a change, as Senate Democrats have said they do not have the votes to help out Republicans, to help Republicans reach the 60 votes that would be needed to pass a continuing resolution to keep the government open near current spending levels until September, as Republicans had hoped that they would. The New York Times reports just before airtime that Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer said on Wednesday that Democrats would refuse to back a stopgap bill to fund the government through September 30, significantly raising the chances of a government shutdown at the end of this week because things were going so well already. After a private caucus meeting among Democrats in the Senate, Schumer instead urged Republicans to consider another extension, a one-month extension instead, in order to allow time to consider individual spending bills and a bipartisan effort to find an agreement. Quote, "Funding the government should be a bipartisan effort, but Republicans chose a partisan path, drafting their continuing resolution without any input from congressional Democrats. Our caucus," he said, "is unified on a clean April 11 CR that will keep the government open and give Congress time to negotiate bipartisan legislation that can pass." Crazy. Democrats have been dubious about the Republican drafted bill passed by the House on Tuesday, which would keep federal spending going at roughly the current levels for the next 6 months, though it does add money for defense. It makes certain cuts to certain domestic programs, and most notably, it puts no brakes at all on the Trump administration's ongoing lawlessness. Democrats say the House bill would give the Trump administration too much leeway to continue efforts to drastically gut the government. And so, with Kentucky's Republican Senator Rand Paul saying that he is also a firm no on the GOP bill that would keep it the government open through September, that bill would need the support of at least 8 Democrats in the Senate to overcome procedural hurdles, to end debate, to overcome the 60-vote filibuster threshold to come to a final vote. Now, Republicans currently have 53 seats in the U.S. Senate to Democrats 47. Republicans on their own, however, do not have the votes to overcome the 60-vote threshold that they love, at least when they're not in power. And so they need Democrats' help. And yet, the Republicans have refused to negotiate with Democrats on this continuing resolution to keep the government open until September, when Republicans then hope to pass their full new budget that will cut social services drastically in order to help pay for a huge tax cut for millionaires, billionaires, and corporations. Senator Ben Ray Lujan of Democrat of New Mexico slammed the House Republicans for cutting Democrats out of the bill writing process. He said, quote, House Republicans right now have demonstrated that they don't care about working with anyone for the good of the American people. They're going to continue marching along those lines. Meanwhile, federal funding is currently set to lapse at 12:01 a.m. on Friday, March 15, if Congress does not act before then to somehow extend the government's ability to pay the bills. Any changes in the House passed bill or another extension would require the House to return and approve it, because what they did was they approved it on Tuesday and then they left town. Republican House leaders deliberately adjourned the chamber to leave town after passing their version of the legislation on Tuesday to effectively force the Senate to accept their legislation as written, no changes allowed. Because, hey, we're not here to vote on it, and the government will shut down if we don't pass something. Now, there's been a lot of debate about among Democrats, really, as to whether they should help keep the government open by passing this bill in the Senate or take the risk of public blowback if government services are shut down because no bill was passed. Many Democrats in the House, who voted nearly unanimously against the measure, have been urging their Senate counterparts to do the same. Representative Hakeem Jeffries, the House Minority Leader, called the measure, quote, a power grab that further unleashes and entrenches Elon Musk's efforts. And he applauded his caucus for sticking together on Tuesday to vote against the Republican House bill and sending a clear message of repudiation for its policies on the House floor. All but one Democrat opposed the measure in the House. That one Democrat, Jared Golden, of Maine. So I will say this for now, good on the Democrats for standing up here so far. I know this was a tough call for many of them, because they're always, you know, the ones who are criticizing Republicans for voting to shut down the government. But given what Republicans are already doing to shut down the government right now, as we speak, which we'll get to in a minute, you know, it seems to me the Democrats need to take a stand somewhere. And on balance, this seems to be a pretty good moment to do exactly that. We will see if they have the stomach to stick with it. But frankly, I did not think that they would until today. So we will see how long that lasts. They would certainly seem to have the ammo to make the case to the American people why such a stand is now necessary, as the demolition of the U.S. government under Donald Trump and his buddy Elon Musk continues apace. On Tuesday, Trump's new head of the Department of Education, which he has vowed to shut down entirely, announced that fully half of the department's agencies are now to be laid off in just the first step toward killing the agency entirely, even though it was formed by Congress and would require an act of Congress to kill it entirely. Of course, if you just fire everyone who works there so they don't do anything, I guess you really don't have to kill it entirely.
Yeah, if you blow it up from within, there's really not much to save or for Congress to vote on.
The union that supports many of the workers at the Department of Education has said that the bulk of those people named for layoffs, however, are minorities and women, and that it will be just all the white dudes left after that first half is pushed out. Anyway, you know, you're supposed to kill an agency like that in Congress before you simply shut it down. That's the way the rule of law and the Constitution is supposed to work, or at least it did until just over 50 days ago when a lawless convicted felon was sworn in as president of the United States and ordered his goons to basically ignore the constitutional order to run roughshod over the federal government ever since then. Other purges over the last, just over the past 24 hours or so, include at NASA, the space agency. They have begun now purging scientists ahead of a Trump administration deadline to do so. The NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, they have begun cutting the chronically understaffed NOAA workforce by 10% or more than 1,000 people at the agency that also houses the National Weather Service. Who needs that? Health and Human Services. The Trump administration is now shuttering half a dozen regional legal offices at HHS facilities that target fraud. I thought they were against waste, fraud, and abuse. Huh. Why are they shutting down the offices that target fraud around the country at Health and Human Services? And, Desi, I know you'll enjoy this one. Mm-hmm. The Environmental Protection Agency plans to close all of its environmental justice offices, according to an internal memo obtained by the New York Times.
I know, because God forbid you should protect Americans from pollution like the law requires you to do.
And in this case, very specific Americans,
yes,
who were protected under the Environmental Justice Office.
Frontline communities, yep, primarily minorities and low-income folks.
And where Trump is killing services to the public, to, yes, we the people, he's alternately offering tremendous favors and, yes, even immunity from the rule of law to countless corporations. Frequently, as it turns out, corporations that are run by his personal friends, or at least those who act like it by giving him a few dollars. You may have already seen or heard about the spectacle on Tuesday, as the front lawn of the White House was turned into a temporary Tesla showroom in what NBC News described as a conspicuous favor to his advisor, Elon Musk, the car company's billionaire CEO. Tesla delivered five of its vehicles to the White House, parked them on a driveway for Trump to pretend to personally inspect. Just hours after Trump said on his social media site that he planned to buy a Tesla to demonstrate his support for Musk and for the slumping company, which has lost about 50% of its stock market value since its high watermark late last year, just after the election, as Musk has turned increasingly hard right and led Trump's demolition of the federal government agencies and services ever since then. Though Trump frequently attacked electric vehicles during last year's campaign, he told reporters that he had heard good things about Teslas from his friends. That's why he now loves the company.
Sure it is.
Because of ethical restraints, it is very rare for a senior government official, let alone a sitting president, to endorse a consumer product so explicitly. In 2017, when then-Trump counselor Kellyanne Conway told Americans to buy from Ivanka Trump's clothing line, she received a warning from government at the Government Ethics Office, which has sort of since been shut down. But at the time, she promised she would never do it again. But of course, there are no such restrictions in place under this corrupt, lawless administration. I should say the restrictions are still in place. There's just nobody in place who is bothering to enforce them, or left to enforce them. By reviewing the Teslas in public before cameras, NBC says Trump ensured that his purchase would get wide attention. White House Deputy Chief of Staff live-streamed the event on X, the social media app owned by Elon Musk. Quote, Just because the corruption plays out in public does not mean it is not corruption, said Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, alongside a video of Trump getting into a Tesla and admiring it. In his first weeks in office, Trump has increasingly moved away from the populist policies and messaging of both his first term and of his campaigns, instead embracing the interests and agendas of his billionaire backers. Musk, in particular, has led the administration's push to cut thousands of largely middle-class federal jobs. How's that going over, MAGA? And people are seeing their retirement savings absolutely tank as the stock market plummets amid uncertainty over Donald Trump's policies, his trade wars. And yet, as all of that was going on, it was Elon Musk who Trump chose to focus on boosting on Tuesday. Not those people losing their jobs, not those people losing their retirement funds.
I mean, your wallet is shrinking, your 401k is taking a really big hit, but of course, Trump's very first thought is to help out his good old buddy Elon.
And he's not the only one. Tesla is hardly the only company that the Trump administration is helping to push. The private corporations run by his friends will be joined momentarily by Rick Claypool of Public Citizen. They have put together a sort of a jaw-dropping database and new report on how the administration, since taking over just 7 weeks ago, is now, quote, halting enforcement against corporate lawbreakers at one federal agency after another, from the SEC to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to the Department of Justice and beyond, all helping guys like Elon Musk. And especially helping those corporations or billionaire heads when they give Donald Trump millions of dollars through his inaugural fund, his library fund, and yes, even his new cryptocurrency business scam. More on that shortly. But of course, the Trump administration knows what they are doing is lawless. Otherwise, what would explain the news first reported by ProPublica yesterday, revealing an email ordering existing staffers that are still left at the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, to burn and shred all documents that are left in the now largely shuttered building. As CBS News reported last night, some USAID employees have been directed to clear out classified safes and personnel documents from the Ronald Reagan building where the agency is housed and shred or burn the records inside them. That according to an email sent to USAID staff. The staffers received the email from USAID's Trump-appointed acting executive secretary, Erica Carr, directing them to clear out classified safes and personal documents as of 9:30 a.m. on Tuesday. Quote, shred as many documents first and reserve the burn bags for when the shredder becomes unavailable or needs a break, the email says. If you need to use the burn bags, do not overfill and ensure that the burn bag can be closed with staples at the top. The only labeling required on the burn bags are the words secret and USAID in dark Sharpie if possible. If you need additional burn bags or Sharpie markers, please let me or the SEC InfoSec team know. The documents being burned, ordered to be burned, could in fact be evidence for multiple court filings that are filed against the Trump administration and the government aid agency. One source familiar with the instructions about the handling of the USAID records told CBS. White House Deputy Secretary Anna Kelly said on social media, the USAID building will soon be occupied by CBP, the Customs and Border Protection, and that the email was sent to roughly three dozen employees claiming that the documents being destroyed were, quote, old, mostly courtesy content from other agencies, and the originals still exist on classified computer systems. Nothing to worry about. But do they exist on other classified computer systems? How would anyone know if those documents were shredded and or burned? Of the roughly three dozen USAID staff who received the email, all had a secret level security clearance or higher. None were on administrative leave. USAID staff also received another email around midday on Tuesday instructing them to come by the USAID annex offices in Washington on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday to retrieve personal belongings. But the email obtained by CBS said staff will be given 15 minutes to complete this retrieval and must be finished removing items within their time slot only before it appeared to contradict the other email on how records should be handled. Quote, while collecting their items, staff must ensure that proper records management practices are employed when identifying and or disposing of records pursuant to the Federal Records Act.
I wonder which one they mean.
On Tuesday, Democracy Forward and Public Citizen litigation groups filed a motion for an emergency temporary restraining order to stop what they called the unlawful destruction of federal records. By Wednesday morning, a court had paused the shredding and burning of the documents in question after the email set off a scramble on Tuesday to stop the destruction of those documents. Lawyers involved in some of the pre-existing USAID lawsuits raced to court to obtain orders to halt the shredding and the burning, with a particular focus on those documents that would be relevant to the ongoing litigation over the purging of workers and the dismantling of the agency. The Trump administration has now reportedly agreed to stop any further destruction of documents at the agency headquarters, at least without first notifying opposing counsel and giving them a chance to take the matter before a judge, or so they claim. The administration denied that it had destroyed any personnel records and said it would provide later on Wednesday a sworn accounting of what actually happened and what they actually destroyed. So does that sound like an administration concerned about the so-called rule of law to you? Not to me, but what do I know? If they were concerned with that, of course, they, you know, probably would not also be gutting the Justice Department's unit that oversees prosecution of public officials accused of corruption. Now, why would they want to do that? Because that's what three sources who spoke on condition of anonymity told NBC News on Tuesday night. The public integrity section has overseen some of the country's most high-profile and sensitive prosecutions. Now, however, only a small fraction of its employees will remain, and the unit will no longer directly handle investigations or prosecutions, according to NBC's sources. So the public integrity section at the Department of Justice will no longer handle or prosecute public integrity issues. Prosecutors in the unit, which had housed dozens of employees, are being told to move to other positions within the department and that its current cases will all be reassigned to U.S. attorneys' offices around the country. Now, these are offices that are headed up by political appointees of the president who are they're likely to pick and choose which of those cases move forward, and based on their choices, which ones do not. They will also face removal by the president, as they, unlike career appointees who handled these cases previously, well, those U.S. attorneys serve at the pleasure of the president. They can be fired for any reason at any time. Better not bring the wrong cases, guys. David Loffman, a former head of the DOJ counterintelligence section who served in both Democratic and Republican administrations, said, quote, the only reasonable interpretation of this extraordinary action is that the administration wants to transfer responsibility for public corruption cases from career attorneys at Main Justice to political appointees heading U.S. attorney offices. The decision, he added, raises, quote, serious questions about whether future investigations and prosecutions will be motivated by improper partisan consideration. Do you think, Dave? Throughout the 2024 campaign, Trump accused the DOJ of conducting politically motivated criminal investigations of him. That, even while the very same department was successfully bringing corruption charges against Democrats like now former and currently jailed New Jersey U.S. Senator Bob Menendez and the current Democratic mayor of New York City. After he took office, Trump signed an executive order calling for the, quote, weaponization of the Justice Department and other federal law enforcement agencies to be ended. That's cute. Biden administration Justice Department officials denied the claim that they had weaponized the department against Trump. They said that their investigations were conducted fairly. They were caused by Trump's own actions. They also noted the convictions of multiple Democrats, including, yes, Menendez. Several officials resigned from the public integrity section last month when the Justice Department moved to drop its corruption charges. I should say the by then Trump-run Justice Department moved to drop the corruption charges against Mayor Eric Adams in New York after his indictment. He had cozied up to Donald Trump. After federal prosecutors in New York refused to drop those charges, Trump appointees at DOJ headquarters in D.C. asked members of the public integrity section to do so. To their credit, most of them refused to do so until they were directly threatened by Trump's defense attorney, personal defense attorney, who's now serving as acting deputy attorney general. John Keller, for example, the acting head of the section put into that job by Donald Trump, refused to drop the Adams charges, and instead he resigned. Three other members of the section also resigned rather than follow that order. And the next day, the Trump attorney turned acting deputy AG Emil Bove held a video meeting with the other members of the public integrity section, ordering one of them to sign a filing asking a judge to dismiss the case against Adams, or they would all be dismissed in just 1 hour's time. Finally, a senior litigation counsel with the section, Edward Sullivan, agreed to sign the filing after the senior prosecutor, nearing the end of his career, decided to do so in order to protect his colleagues. Created in 1976 after the Watergate scandal, in response to that scandal, the Public Integrity Unit was set up to supervise investigations and prosecutions of allegations of corruption in federal, state, and local government by elected and appointed officials, including judges. It also supervises investigations and prosecutions of election crimes, including voter fraud and campaign finance offenses. Apparently, the Trump administration is not in any hurry to investigate and prosecute those kinds of crimes either for some reason. So much for law and order and the rule of law when it comes to their own behavior or that of public officials. And what about major corporations run by friends of the president? Do you think that they have anything to worry about over the next 4 years? How about if they give millions of dollars to Donald Trump in exchange for dropping federal investigations and prosecutions against those companies? That's where we pick up next, of course, with Rick Claypool of Public Citizen, which finds that the administration is giving out get-out-of-jail-free cards like candy. That's next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the broadcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
And the money kept rolling in. from every side.
Man, I love that song. Makes me feel better about the segment I'm about to do. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. All right, you may or may not have heard this story. In March of 2023, the Security and Exchange Commission under then-President Joe Biden charged Chinese cryptocurrency entrepreneur Justin Sun and three of his companies, accusing them of marketing unregistered securities and, quote, fraudulently manipulating the secondary market for a crypto token. The SEC accused Sun of something called wash trading, which involves buying and selling a token quickly to fraudulently manufacture artificial interest. Few people spend a whole lot of money on the token. It shoots way up in value. Others jump in to get on board, and the original owners quickly sell it off at a much higher rate. A modern-day version of a pump-and-dump scheme, if you will. Sun was also charged in the same SEC suit with paying celebrities for publicly endorsing his crypto without disclosing their compensation, and that violates federal law, or at least it used to, when the SEC enforced such things as the rule of law. A few weeks after Trump won the 2024 presidential election, Justin Sun very publicly announced that he had become the largest investor in World Liberty Financial, or WLF, a brand new crypto venture set up by Donald Trump and his family. Sun bought some $30 million of its tokens. Again, this was just weeks after Trump had been announced the winner of the 2024 election for president. Sun publicly and brazenly added that his company named Tron was, quote, committed to making America great again. Sun's purchase put about $18 million into Donald Trump's pockets originally. He subsequently invested another $45 million in World Liberty Financial, bringing his total investment in Trump's new cryptocurrency venture, set up just before last year's election, to $75 million. On January 22, just 2 days after his inauguration, Sun posted on the site previously known as Twitter, quote, "If I have made any money in cryptocurrency, all credit goes to President Trump." Just 1 month later, Sun and the Securities and Exchange Commission, which had charged Sun with multiple crimes in 2023, but now under the control of Donald Trump, they sent a joint letter to a federal judge asking for a stay of Sun's case. That stay was granted. It will, apparently, the case will now be going away thanks to the election of Donald Trump and millions of dollars directly placed into his pocket by an alleged fraudster just after it became clear that Trump would once again become president of the United States. As noted, you may or may not have heard that story, but it's hardly the only one like it. According to a report released last week by our friends at the longtime nonprofit government watchdog PublicCitizen.org, the new report titled Corporate Clemency: How Trump is Halting Enforcement Against Corporate Lawbreakers compiles a breathtaking collection of similar stories underway right now benefiting other friends of the president. According to the report's author, Rick Claypool, President Trump talks tough on crime, but his administration is once again betraying a preference for going soft on corporations that break the law. Public Citizen is tracking federal investigations and cases into corporate misconduct the Trump administration inherited from the Biden administration. The following analysis, they write, covers 429 separate investigations and cases against 361 corporations over alleged lawbreaking, including at least 25 involving allegations of criminal misconduct. The first time Trump took office, the report notes, corporate enforcement plunged. Now, just over 1 month into Trump's second term, it's clear that the permissive approach to corporate crime and misconduct is returning with a vengeance. An increasing number of Security and Exchange Commission cases against cryptocurrency corporations, like the one described about Justin Sun, literally just giving away millions of dollars to the Trump family after the election and just before he was sworn into office, have been dismissed. Trump's SEC has paused two other such cases and moved to completely dismiss four others. All Consumer Financial Protection Bureau cases, seven of which the Trump administration has already moved to dismiss, have come to a screeching halt. Justice Department cases brought by the Civil Rights and Environmental and Natural Resources Divisions have gone away. Investigations and cases under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, you know, the law that makes bribing foreign officials a crime, well, those have gone away. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission cases defending transgender and gender nonconforming workers from workplace abuse and discrimination, six of which the administration has already moved to dismiss, well, they're all going away. And Public Citizen notes, this is only the beginning. Joining us now is Rick Claypool, lead author of the report for Public Citizen, as I note, the jaw-dropping report, where he is their research director focused on corporate crime and wrongdoing and the ways that corporate power distorts democracy. Rick Claypool, welcome to the broadcast, sir. Delighted to have you here, and thank you for this this really helpful and important work.
Thank you so much, Brad. So happy to be here.
Now, I've been tracking just some of the stories that you report details on, but man, there's just tons of stuff in here that I had no idea about, like favors that Trump appears to be granting for the son of recently sworn in billionaire Republican U.S. Senator from West Virginia, Jim Justice, a coal baron, and so much more. It's kind of tough to know where to start. But let me just hit a few more top lines here and get your thoughts. You report that in just the first 6 weeks of his presidency, the Trump administration, quote, has already halted or moved to dismiss enforcement investigations and cases against 89 corporations, including all 42 corporations facing probes at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, 20 at DOJ and SEC. Eight companies at the facing probes by the DOJ Civil Rights Division, seven at the Environmental Division, and so forth. Before we get into a few specifics, do those companies have anything in common? Are they at all somehow friends of the president, or are they just, you know, doing stuff that this administration doesn't feel like prosecuting, doesn't feel like should be illegal anymore?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a mixed bag, and I want to step back because, you know, one thing about that problem about a report like this is that it's always the number is always, you know, it's like it's 89 and counting, right?
Okay.
So, as you speak right now, we're approaching 100. You know, we're continuing to track these, and we have our corporate enforcement tracker site that we're trying to keep updated to do that. But this is a constantly shifting landscape. But it is a trend that is moving and increasing.
And let me know by the way. Let me know by the way, Rick, that this report was published about just a little over a week ago, I think. So that number has gone from 89 to 100 in just those 7 or 8 days since then.
Yeah. We're close to 100. We're not there yet.
Okay.
I think we're going to – that will be an important marker. But so far, I mean, these mostly they seem to be, you know, cases against their decisions to either, you know, pause or just stop altogether, kinds of enforcement that the administration and Trump does not like,
right?
What do these things have in common? I mean, the biggest chunk of cases is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau cases, which I'm aware of one that they have said that they're going to continue with among the many, many that they are pausing and dismissing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the commentary on that from OMB head, Russ.
Russ Vogt. Yeah.
Vogt. Yeah. You know, he was, you know, momentarily the head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. The quote, you know, the weaponization of, or sorry, weaponized consumer protection has to end. That's not something that anybody has really talked about. And I do worry that's not just code as consumer protection must end. That is just sort of a an ideological suspicion with the idea of preventing people from being, you know, tricked and scammed and otherwise ripped off by the kinds of companies that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau goes after to, you know, that is engaged in those kinds of practices.
Essentially, preventing that must end. Stopping people from getting ripped off must end. Now, Rick, new, you know, presidential administrations, both Republican and Democrat, will often, when they come into office, will set what they see as priorities for prosecution. As I understand it, you know, they'll choose to focus on certain crimes and not as much on others. But is it normal to simply drop or dismiss so many cases previously prosecuted and or under investigation the way this administration is doing?
Now, this is highly unusual. A former commissioner from the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission remarked that they were never aware of cases being dismissed for, you know, by the agency itself for any reason other than just the maybe the strength of the case itself, right? Not because of the actual content. But here, I mean, these cases are plainly, they are being dropped and dismissed in response to Trump's executive order, sort of, the anti-transgender and, quote, gender ideology executive order. And so, I mean, it's a bit horrifying to see the agency that's supposed to be, you know, protecting people from discrimination, seems to be actively essentially discriminating against a category of worker that they're supposed to be protecting. You know, these are, you know, egregious cases where people are being abused at work and discriminated against, reporting it to higher ups like anyone should, and then being fired for it. That's one example. You know, the other types of things that are going down, just this past week, there was a factory, a plastics factory in Louisiana, Denka Performance Elastomers and DuPont were facing charges from the Justice Department because the high concentrations of carcinogenic air pollution coming from the factory.
Right.
And part of the Biden administration sort of what they discussed in bringing the case was that, you know, it was the way it was the sort of Cancer Alley location means that this factory was disproportionately harming Black and low-income Americans. Flash forward to now, Trump's Justice Department actually put out a press release about dropping the case, essentially celebrating that this is the end of these diversity, equity, inclusion policies, citing the so-called anti-DEI executive order, and dropping this case that's essentially, you know, protecting Americans, disproportionately Black Americans in these communities because air pollution.
Yeah, and they're proud of that. They're proud of that. We're not going to go out of our way to protect certain minorities who have been, mistreated and frankly sickened and killed. And they want to crow about it. I want to run through, as you do in your report, Rick Claypool, at the top, some of the cases previously being faced by the billionaires that so many of us saw standing right beside the president, Donald Trump, on the podium at his inauguration in January. But you note that 34 corporate inauguration donors facing federal enforcement collectively gave at least $34 million towards Trump's inaugural festivities, which is now apparently legal. These 34 corporations collectively face 60 separate federal investigations and lawsuits. Are any of those corporations and those donors among the probes and the cases that have been dismissed or stayed so far as you've been tracking this?
I think a few of those cases have been dropped so far. I think, you know, the crypto cases most notably with Coinbase, which gave $1 million. The Trump's SEC case against Coinbase has been dismissed. Similarly, the Kraken gave $1 million. Case has been dismissed. And there is reporting that Ripple, which gave $5 million worth in crypto, for the inauguration, has not been dismissed yet. But there's been a lot of reporting that is very much anticipated and in the plaintiff line. And then whenever you have a number of these, for some of these businesses, the $1 million donation to the president's inauguration is just the tip of the iceberg, right? Yeah. Like Amazon in particular has been, which faces 7 federal investigations just by itself right now.
Yeah.
They've just re-upped all 7 seasons of The Apprentice now, which is going to result in an unknown payout to Trump, who is an executive producer of the show.
Yeah.
They've got the licensing deal for a show about Melania, which is reportedly putting about $28 million in the Trump family's pocket there. And this bizarre move on the Washington Post editorial policy, essentially saying that, opinions that are sort of critical of what seems like of a pretty,
of a free market
extreme version the statement said something to the degree that free markets and liberty mean that, no one is coerced into anything, but our editorial chief didn't really like where we were going, so he left.
Right. So that we can
rather than go along with it.
So that we can coerce everyone who chooses to stay behind. Yeah. And of course, Jeff Bezos was one of the Amazon founder, Washington Post owner. He was one of the folks on that podium side by side with Donald Trump at his inauguration. Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg, Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google's parent company, Tim Cook of Apple, and of course, Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla, SpaceX, Neuralink, and the site formerly known as Twitter, just to name a few of his companies. You detail even more cases that are underway against him than I had realized. Are you able to quickly sort of summarize some of those cases, or at least the most disturbing ones, and their status at this point, as he's become Donald Trump's BFF and arguably co-president as the federal government's hatchet man at this point?
Yeah. So, that's where, where opportunities for real conflicts are possible, because like Musk's sort of, Doge effort is essentially seizing the agencies that are responsible for overseeing Musk's companies.
Mm-hmm.
So just very quickly, Neuralink, that investigation, the status of it is unclear, because the inspector general of the agency was leading it. That was an investigation into alleged mistreatment of test monkeys, and Trump fired inspectors general across several agencies, and so including the USDA. So whether there is someone who would pick that up at all is unclear. There's an SEC investigation as well against that company. SpaceX is facing, several investigations, and including there was a civil rights lawsuit by the Justice Department that the Trump administration dismissed. That was against SpaceX for discriminating against, asylum seekers and refugees. Tesla, for someone who talks about fraud as much as Musk does, I feel like it's rather underreported that Tesla is facing a criminal fraud investigation by the Justice Department. That is ongoing, as far as I know, and the core of that are the sort of claims that autopilot mode of those self-driving vehicles has been wildly exaggerated and overstated, and there is a separate investigation into whether that is sort of misleading to investors.
Go ahead. Finish that one.
And the OSHA investigation, actually that one has just wrapped up. So we got the announcement that though there was a worker who was who died on the job at a Tesla factory in Texas. We know now that for 3 serious violations. Tesla was fined to the degree of, you know, $49,000, which, you know, I mean, OSHA has a problem structurally with infamously low penalties, but it's just a tragedy that, like, someone lost their life and, like, that is the penalty for a multi-billion dollar company.
Yeah, $49,000. And, you know, as you describe these, it seems kind of impossible, you know, just looking at the big fraud investigations by the DOJ, that if they're even still underway, fraud investigations against Elon Musk, against Tesla, it seems just to beggar belief that those cases would actually ultimately move forward against the guy who is, you know, sort of running the government at this point, Elon Musk. I can't imagine Pam Bondi announcing this case against Elon Musk. And whether she does or doesn't, whether any case ever comes or doesn't come, it seems to me that it's going to be suspect. If she says, oh, it turns out we looked into it, there's nothing there, nothing to worry about, it seems like no matter what, or if we just never hear, if it just goes away completely, and it seems like the public is the one paying the price for this conflict of interest, even the appearance of a conflict of interest, no?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, corporate crime, you know, disproportionately, you know, harms, you know, consumers and workers and the general public. You know? So, you know, it makes sure that these companies are held to account, but they're not, you know, cutting corners in ways that rip us off or are dangerous, or that are, you know, exploitative to workers. And I mean, dropping the cases, you know, whatever, or resolving the cases on a low dollar amount. Yeah, that, I guess, the individual companies, you know, their shareholders might cheer that on. But if I'm just a normal American who, you know, relies on just the products that they buy, just basically working and going to my job, or I want to, you know, have my basic rights be expected, I'm in a much poorer position if it means that these, you know, the laws against corporate crime are not going enforced. And if companies know they can break the law with impunity, they will, you know, I mean, they will know, okay, like, things are not being enforced. I mean, it is a frequent precursor to corporate catastrophes, like the crash of 2008, like the, you know, Purdue Pharma and the Sacklers pushing mm-hmm. OxyContins, you know, like the Volkswagen people cheating case, right? All these things have been what comes before is mm-hmm. just a you know, a lack of oversight that allows this kind of you know, corporate misconduct to fester. Because, you know, I mean, corporations, I mean, they're just essentially they're for generating profit, right? You can just see them as profit generating machines. And mm-hmm. if, you know, comply, if they can, you know, cut corners in ways that break the law, but they don't think they're going to get caught, then they're probably going to break the law. And that's going to harm people in the process of sort of pursuing those mm-hmm. those shareholder returns.
Rick, I've got just a minute or two here very quickly. As someone who I know has been covering this nexus of corruption between public government and private corporations, have even you been surprised by any of this, or is this largely what you expected based on what, you know, happened during Trump's first term and or his behavior and his statements since then on the campaign trail?
I mean, I expected it to some degree, right? But this is way worse than I expected. You know, I mean, I started, you know, tracking these, you know, knowing, you know, before, you know, the election, of knowing that, okay, that you're going to see what happens, because we saw some individual cases being, you know, dropped and penalties reduced the first time around. But attacks on whole categories of enforcement and cases just being dropped like flies, that's unprecedented as far as I know. And it makes me very worried that it's going to start to, you know, in some of these categories, if they continue some cases, it's almost going to start to look like, are they being continued for, you know, political reasons or mm-hmm. some reasons that the, you know, the companies are being discredited, right? And it's, so it just, the whole thing just corrupts the rule of law and enforcement against the most powerful.
Yeah. And I think it will be telling to see which cases, as you note, do continue, which, you know, and those will be just as suspect, because are they continuing because there's actual crime? Or are they continuing because these are people who did not put a few million dollars into the inauguration or the president's library fund or his cryptocurrency company? I should note that the Public Citizen has set up a database covering more than 420 cases that is searchable by, yes, you, the public. It's called the Corporate Enforcement Tracker. Investigations and cases against corporate misconduct at risk during the Trump administration. That is a searchable database that you can look up to follow these cases and these companies on your own. We'll link to it tonight, but you can do a web search for Public Citizen Corporate Enforcement Tracker, and I suspect you will find it. The report from Public Citizen ends this way, with this arguably understated conclusion. Quote, corporate crime and lawbreaking can victimize millions of Americans at an unimaginable scale. The bitter irony that it can happen under the banner of a supposed law and order presidential platform might be amusing if the reality was not so plainly catastrophic. This will not end well. That from the report's author, Rick Claypool. He is a research director for publiccitizen.org. He focuses on corporate crime and wrongdoing and the ways the corporate power distort democracy. You can find his work, of course, at citizen.org, and you can find him on the blue skies at Rick Claypool, and Public Citizen is there as well at Public Citizen. Rick, really enjoyed talking to you today. Thank you again for this report. I will look forward to the inevitable updates that should be coming at any time, I suspect.
Thanks so much, Brad.
You bet. Thank you. Okay, running it right up to the wall,
yeah,
I do realize. Sorry about that.
Oh my, so much corporate corruption going on. It's astounding.
Gotta go. Thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, and thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other we've ever done, you can download them anytime for free at bradblog.com. Download them, share them with your friends and family and enemies and everything else. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, you will find me at TheBradBlog, especially on Blue Sky. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.